Over time, as machines become more and more sophisticated and learn to make decisions on our behalf, we have been delegating that responsibility to AI. Why wouldn't we? They only do what we allow them to, as precisely and efficiently as possible. But what if that efficiency means that real humans suffer unfair treatment, that those decisions that are impacting life and death are made by systems with no human compassion? Join us as we tackle ethics and AI right now. So, Costa, what are the five big moral questions facing the use of AI today?
That's a good one. So when we talk about like moral dilemmas, every big ethics in AI leader has their own perspective. People and industries, when we talk about this topic, have very vast sort of perspectives that we can delve into. I mean, look at Google, right? They start up an ethics committee or an ethics board, I think in 2019, dismembered it within a week. I think it was April 2019. I might be getting my dates wrong here. And then obviously what's going on with Timnit Gebru. I apologize if I didn't pronounce that right. But we see what's happening, you know, in the tech sphere, right? And then there's countries like Australia and Singapore. If you go on their website and their government website and look at their ethics framework, it's absolutely insane. You see all sorts of guidelines and steps to take to make sure that AI is behaving ethically. It's super cool. But there's obviously some things that everybody can sort of agree upon, right? And the first one is very simple: privacy and data protection. I don't want to say more than that needs to be on this topic. We all know that privacy is super important, right? And especially when you talk about this new concept of machine learning, or not new, but evolving concept of machine learning called convolutional neural networks, right? Which is basically computer vision and stuff related to people's photos. And that's when you talk about data requirement for that, it's basically pictures for people, right? And that's, you need to be privacy conscious and protection conscious when you're talking about people's photos and images, right? The second one is transparency and explainability. This one is very close to every data scientist's heart, just because it's super hard to stick to this, but it's also very important. People treat sort of AI as a black box, and we as sort of machine learning engineers especially are trying to get away from that and trying to increase the transparency and explainability within an algorithm to a point where it's understandable by the general public, right? The third is bias and discrimination. Again, all of these like sort of guidelines and policies are not anything crazy. Like, I'm guessing you're not surprised here with the things that I'm talking about, right? But it's super important. People, bias is our responsibility. It hurts people that are discriminated against. And it's very, very important that we talk about this and are vocal about this and make sure that we eliminate this as much as possible. The fourth one is beneficence and non-maleficence. Again, super sort of bright, big words. But it's all we're trying to say is that an AI should benefit people and not harm people. And the last one is autonomy. This one is super interesting because if you think about it, every human should have a right in what's being done or said about them, right? You shouldn't be side sort of tracked when a decision is made about you. But it's complex when you talk about an AI, right? An AI might suggest that you don't get a certain mortgage. Why is that, right? So that's the autonomy we try and still keep within the humans, right? The end sort of decision and result should be within the humans.
Right on. So let's tackle the issues around privacy and data first. How can the data be collected by AI? Like, how can it be managed effectively? Mm-hmm. And how can we safeguard against how that data might be used?
That's a good one. I'll talk about, and this is not to toot my own horn or talk about trying to sell our own practice here, but we're doing a very interesting project here in M&P with a lottery commission. And what they're trying to do, super sort of novel and cool process, except for the fact that Google and YouTube have implemented this, they're trying to help predict age of a certain customer when they walk into, let's say, a retail store, so that these lottery tickets can be given to them without actually IDing them in person. So when I talk about YouTube doing that, it's actually YouTube, I think this was earlier last year or the year before, it's 2019 or 2020, in that sort of spectrum, they introduced this within their videos. So, you know, certain videos, you can't just watch them because you might be underage. Right. So what YouTube has done is they use your photo. They turn on your camera, look at you, and then guesstimate or predict how old you are. And that's what I mean by what we're trying to do here is predict whether a certain person is a minor or not, and whether they're able to buy the lottery ticket or not. Right. And you think about it. I mean, if we successfully prove this, there's so many things that we can do. You could buy alcohol at a vending machine. You don't need to be ID'd, right?
Yeah.
If this is successful, it could really, really work. But then again, you could even imagine, like, it's, there's so much privacy and data sort of protection that we need to make sure that happens. So what we're doing in our project here is that we're collecting these images with explicit consent. And explicit consent, I mean, is that there's so many ways you collect this data. I mean, and this data is people, their images, right? And it's close to themselves, right? It's like people and their literal faces. As much as you can anonymize that, you're still putting people's faces and their face data into an algorithm, right? And that's, when you think about that, that's not a light issue to be considered, right? That's a pretty heavy thing that you're doing. So it's important that we sort of make sure that it's explicitly known what are we using this data for. And we're not scraping it off of the internet. We're not taking this data off of the internet of some people that accidentally put it there or don't know it's there. We're explicitly telling people, hey, if you're okay with this, we're developing this cool cutting edge technology. Would you want to be part of this journey? And that's how I think privacy can be maintained. I mean, in the age of social media, it's sort of hard to maintain privacy. But when it comes to AI, we really need to be careful. And when it comes to data protection, sorry, the second thing, it's all about encryption and security.
Right, right.
We just talked about privacy and data protection. And, you know, I mentioned we're looking at people's photos and trying to collect like images of their face. What are your thoughts as somebody who's not in this field? If I asked you for your photo to be used in a random algorithm that people will never sort of directly see your photo being used in it, but you'll be a part of it. What do you feel?
Well, there's two sides to that question. So how I would feel about it, it depends on the use of the image and where it's being used and how it's being used, most importantly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But it's also illegal to use my face without basically prior consent. It's not a thing mm-hmm. that can be done. So you have to make mm-hmm. sure that whatever you're using it for,
I agree.
You're giving, that person has been given consent.
No, yeah, that's totally fair.
At least
fair,
that's the way it works in Canada, especially
you
if you're
Would you
doing advertising with that image. I mean, if it's just as far as facial recognition goes and the AI is just trying to figure out who's who,
mm-hmm.
I don't think the legislation has caught up to that yet. I don't think it can. I think if you're just using it for facial recognition purposes, then legally you're fine. Mm-hmm. And personally, I'm fine with that.
Okay.
Like, because I want to be recognized by the device that I'm using.
Okay. Cool.
Right.
So you're okay with your image sort of face being used. Only again, so the explicit consent sort of concept comes in, right? You're explicitly okay for your face to be used for your device to recognize you, right?
Yeah.
And let's say you were an avid sort of lottery person, right? You were interested in that. You might be okay with your image being used for that. But again, like, I think you're echoing the same thing. It's like, okay, explicitly tell people what you're using their data for, and they might be more on board with you using it because they know what's up, right?
Yeah, absolutely, right? Like, if I know that, for example, my Alexa device is probably recording my voice even as we speak
as we
right
speak.
Now. But how that data is being used, like, and how long it's being stored maybe, and what's being recorded, That's all up for debate, I think, and that's kind of an open to interpretation, which absolutely. I think we need our legislation to catch up on a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that kind of goes into the next question here. Like, how can you ensure that companies are open and accountable for the decision that their AI makes and what the AI is doing with that data?
That's very important. I have a thing for you based on your comment. I got an email, and this is very surprising because you never get this email, that my Google Play data was going to be deleted, finally. I had Google Play maybe in 2015 or 16, right? Google Play is not even a thing anymore. And I got a notification that my data is being deleted. And I thought, this is a very small step towards sort of privacy, but it's a big step. If Google is willingly telling us that my data is being deleted, I think, again, explicitly telling people what you're doing with their data brings in the trust and confidence you need for technology to improve, I think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's no question about that. But, you know, these are kind of the simple AIs, like, you know, they're actively collecting your data. I don't know if Google Play, that only collects the data that you're inputting, right? It doesn't necessarily.
Agreed, yeah.
Right, so that's kind of a different story. But when you're talking about smarter AIs, like things that activate your camera and target you with ads, and I mean, how is there a way to ensure that the decisions that the AI produces are indiscriminate and unbiased? And I mean, I just want to make sure that everybody is treated equally and fairly.
That's so interesting. So you said, you asked one question that let's get into first is okay. Whether AI, companies can be accountable for the decisions that they, that an AI makes, right?
Yeah.
And the answer to that totally and, you know, like wholeheartedly and without any question should be yes. There's no way a company should not be accountable for what the decisions their AI that they produced is making. There's no like sort of second way about that, if that makes sense, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's very important to sort of say that outright, is that yes, will and should be. Now, how do you make that happen? The sad sort of part is that technology-wise, there's no real way of making that happen unless you step in. So what I mean by that is, again, we bring it back to one of the dilemmas, which is like autonomy that we talked about, right?
Right.
Which is essentially that we as creators of a certain AI should be absolutely in control of the final decision that comes out of the AI. By that I mean is an AI will nudge you towards something, right? But you should make the final decision of whether that should go into place or not. So let's say, again, I'll bring that mortgage sort of question example again, because I like that. And redlining was huge, I mean, in the States for a while, right? So glad that happens probably less now, but not to the point where we'd like it to be. But
right.
It's, again, it's super important that we sort of bring that up, that if an AI suggests that a certain sort of family, certain area, people in a certain area are not supposed to get mortgages higher than, let's say, 500,000 for some reason.
Right, yeah.
And the reason is more often than not is because of what has happened in the past, and what has happened in the past we know is not the best when it comes to these sorts of things. The final decision should be still the humans, right? So an AI suggests something, but the person giving out this mortgage should make that decision on whether this is right or not. So again, it's the whole thing where autonomous decisions should and will still be in play for the longest time. We were not going to let AI sort of make decisions for us that are absolute and finite.
Yeah, okay, that makes a whole lot of sense. But I guess my bigger question is how can we make sure that the decision that the AI makes benefits people rather than harms them? Like you sort of answered that question when you were talking, when you gave the example there, but, and you're making sure, we're trying to make sure that a person has the final decision, right? But yeah. Do we know, can we track the way that that person, that the AI, sorry, is making that decision for the person that's ending up making that final judgment? Is there a series of decisions that the AI is making, right?
Yeah.
That you can track?
Actually, that's a, Yeah, that's a super, that's a very like intuitively nice way to think about it, right? So there, now that the discrimination of AI that was pretty prevalent in the past has come into like the limelight, as it were, right? Everybody's sort of talking about it. Everybody wants to be, you know, make sure that our AIs are sort of non-biased, non-discriminatory, are benefiting people. Google, the IBMs of the world, the Facebooks, everybody's coming out with tools to make sure that this exact thing, same thing happens. So I know that we're not in like the first, like this is the third episode, we're not looking to go into super detail about technologies that's out there, but I'll name one, right? It's this thing called the Google's Model Card Toolkit. What it does, it creates like model cards for machine learning models and sort of is that bridge between the model creator and the user and gives context and transparency around the model. So like you said, right, the certain decisions that are being taken in phases, this is where you would find this in the model tool card, right? You find these certain decisions that are affecting people in their lives.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a question for you. Like, it's sort of my last question, but like, is there a way that as individuals, like for myself, do we have the right to have a look at that decision-making power that the AI is sort of like that the other side has previously ceded to it? Do you know what I mean? Like the decision that the AI is making, can we have a general understanding ever of how the AI is making those decisions and make sure that we're always in control?
Yeah, no, that's an absolutely valid point. And I think for whoever's listening out there, everybody sort of wonders, how did I get pegged as this person? How did an AI decide that I'm this person, right?
Right.
And this is good for me. They should have known. I should know more better, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's what the sort of transparency dilemma is all about. Where if you look at AI, I mean, in the past 10 years, it's been pitched and pitched and pitched and pitched to everyone as a black box, right?
Yeah.
And to be honest, right? Like if I ask you what's happening behind the curtains, you wouldn't probably know that much. And that's probably us as AI practitioners, our fault, because we should be the people that are explaining what's happening behind sort of, let's say, the most simplest regression model. What's happening behind a regression model? Why is this final output the way it is, right? And you're totally right. It should be shared with the end product. So, okay, another cool example. Okay, so this is exciting because it's talking about COVID and COVID is everywhere. So, again, we at MNP worked with on this project called Lifesaver. And it's this project with the Ocean Supercluster, amazing project where we try and help businesses, communities function with COVID. So COVID's not going anywhere. We wanted to make a product that would help you function while in these times, right? And how we do that is that we predict how many people around you are infectious, right?
Right.
So you're going to the mall, you're going anywhere. You want to know, I mean, I want to know at least how many people around me could be infectious, right? And that's super important. If I see, all right, you know what, like place X is people walking around are like crazy infectious. I don't want to go there, right? And that's really fine for now. That's what it is, right? And now this can be thought of as being discriminatory in a lot of ways if you think about it, right? If our app, let's say it's being widely used, discriminates against a certain area because of their high case count, you could say, dude, like you designed this app to discriminate against this specific area, and this is why people are not going there. So to counteract that, what we did was we're sort of in the process of writing this, but we're writing a paper explaining our entire model. So whoever, and putting it up alongside our app. So whoever wants to look at this, go ahead. This is how it's designed, you know? This is what's happening.
Yeah.
Check it out. Do you like it? You can use it. If you don't like it, you can't. You're totally open to not using it. But this, I feel like, is one of the big things that is going to start coming out in this century, decade, is that people build AI models. There has to be something explaining what the model's doing.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. That makes perfect sense. Well, I mean, that's all the questions I think that I have on this topic. It's been pretty enlightening.
There's one other thing that I wanted to talk to you about.
All right.
And let's see. I just wanted to get your thoughts. I'm just pulling the write-up up. One sec.
Sure.
It's about this documentary called The Social Dilemma. Have you watched it?
I haven't yet. I've heard a lot about it.
What have you heard about it, and would you watch it?
Oh, I definitely want to watch it. It's on my list. You know what I mean?
Yeah, one of those lists. I swear to God, my list just keeps going.
Oh, but, man. It's Netflix, man. They got me.
With lockdown, like, I swear, all I do is watch TV shows. But why this is super important is in that show, the one cool thing. So let me backtrack and actually an example of, give a sort of a summary of what that show is about.
Okay.
Yeah. So let's give this, The Social Dilemma on Netflix. Let's give this a summary for anyone who's like you and hasn't watched it. It's on their quote unquote list.
Yeah. Whatever. Tell me about it. I'm interested. Like I said, it's on my list, but I haven't quite got to it yet.
It's okay.
I actually watched a climate change documentary yesterday with Woody Harrelson.
Oh, damn, nice.
So it's not like I'm not watching docs over here.
I was just going to say, like, if you're watching just like shows like Too Hot to Handle, those drama shows, like, I'm disappointed.
No.
Because you're a dad, you know, you gotta be instilling good virtues into the kids.
Well, right? I think they're instilling good virtues into me, to be honest.
All right, so Social Dilemma. This is a show that explains to us in simple language what Netflix, our favorite social channels, what do they do? Netflix, Instagram, your Twitters, everything. What's happening? What do they do? And they explain to us how these companies make money, and they explain to us how we're so glued to these things and can't move away. Right? If I look at my screen time right now, it's probably like around the 6-hour mark, and that's not good. Right?
Absolutely not.
It's like, it's awful, right? But the reason why it's interesting is that one of the things that I can't remember, I think it was a Pinterest executive or somebody, they said that if you don't know what the product is, you are the product. And 100%. That has just stuck with me forever. I mean, all these free services like Facebook, Instagram, they're not free, right? Somebody's making money. No, nothing in corporate America is free.
No,
somebody's making their money somehow, right? So, and how they're making their money is through us, right? And we're the product, right? And to be honest, it's not the biggest problem most of the time, right? If I think about it, I'm like, okay, I was talking about buying this guitar, and now all I see is guitar commercials. Not the worst thing, you know. I don't have to like go out and search through that. I actually found the guitar that I wanted to buy. Not too bad. I was thinking about buying something as simple as toilet paper, and now I have like 10 options, like 2-ply, 4-ply, 18-ply, right?
right.
And that's fine. But when you think about news, it's a big problem. Like, this might be too political, but are you more on the left, more on the right, in the center? Just what are your views? If this is not too much to ask.
No, I mean, I think I'm closer to the center. I mean, that's up to debate, I guess, on the subject. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's the sort of, sometimes there's the creep factor, right? Is like, when an AI nails it so close that you're like, how the heck did it know that? Like, is it listening to me all the time? Like, yes. You know what I mean? Like, it sometimes it feels like I'll be having a conversation with my buddy on the train or something, and we'll be talking about something that we want to purchase, and no word of lie, we go on Facebook and there it is, and we're like, my phone was off.
That's messed up. Yeah. My phone was off. How?
Yeah.
So that's one aspect. But when it comes to like the political sort of news aspect, it becomes like even crazier, right? If you think about it, I would consider myself between the left and the center somewhere, right? But I am open to hearing views on the opposite side because I want to be holistically informed, right?
Absolutely.
And then make my decision on where I stand, right? On any topic, in any topic, I think, like in life, right? And in this day and age, that's that confirmation bias is massive with, because of these companies, because they look at you, they see you're searching for only these types of views. Let's only feed you more of these types of views. So you wouldn't even know what's happening on the other side of the table. And not saying that they are right, the other side of the table is right, or you're right, but you'd like to sort of know the entire story without making your decision, correct? What do you think?
Yeah, that's kind of that leads me back into the question that I asked previously, right? Is like, how can we know what our data is being used for, how it's being transferred, you know, like all that stuff.
Exactly. And say Facebook released how, and it's proprietary, so it gets hard, but if they released how they're sort of feeding you more and more of these ads or more of this news,
yeah,
you'd at least have the idea of whether you want to continue using this service, right? But you don't know. So all you get is that confirmation bias, and you have no need or no sort of desire to go out there and search for yourself on what is actually the truth, I believe.
Yeah. Right? I mean, I think that's the big difference that you have between credible news agencies, right? And social media. That's the big difference is social media is going to keep churning your kind of whatever information it wants to provide you. And you're just going to stay in your bubble. Whereas the news media, there might be a certain amount of bias to it, but what they're supposed to be doing is giving you facts to back up their opinions.
Exactly. Right? And that I feel like is the biggest sort of learning from Social Dilemma, the Netflix documentary that we can watch here, is that, you know, if anything we should learn from that documentary is that what we see on our social media is confirmation bias. So we should go out there and search for truths and facts and then make up our mind, right?
Yeah.
And facts will be on both sides, right? And it's up to us what side we sort of stand on, but at least we'll have both sides. And another sort of messed up thing that we realized and tried because of that documentary was my buddy's girlfriend, she was watching the show called Grey's Anatomy on Netflix, right?
Oh no.
Yeah.
That's a dark hole.
Exactly. It's like 14.
There's so
like
many episodes.
Our episodes, like it's wild. But she was watching it, and none of me and my buddy, we never watched it, right? Actually, that's a lie. I've watched it. I didn't just want to say
you've been caught. You've been caught.
I started when I was dating somebody, and then, you know, I just got hooked. But regardless of the point, the one I was trying to make was he never watched it before, okay?
Right.
Searched up something. He searched up what season does. Right?
Yeah.
And all of his suggestions were from Grey's Anatomy. Everything was from Grey's Anatomy.
Really?
What season did Derek die in? This character in Grey's Anatomy, something, I can't remember exactly, but other characters died in. When does it end? When's the next season? Everything was from that show. And that is because geographically you're close to somebody who's really looking into this.
Yeah.
So when you look into this, that's what it shows you. Right?
Of
and
course
that's why.
It, yeah.
Why?
So here's another question then. How can AI differentiate between household members? Because you're kind of bringing this up, right? It was your roommate, you said, that was looking into Grey's Anatomy, and he got a whole bunch of feedback based off of something that you typed in.
Yeah, that's interesting. So if we look at like products that we use.
Sure.
Google, I think it's Google Nest Mini or the Google Home Mini. It allows for voice activation. I'm pretty sure Alexa does as well.
Absolutely, it does.
Right?
I don't know. So I don't want to tell you how many times my daughters have asked Alexa, tell me a joke or sing me a song.
Yeah, exactly. So if that is one way that I guess our AI devices could differ between or amongst household members, I guess. But that's a really good question. I mean, we definitely, we should make this into like a question that we answer on our second part of this AI in ethics and AI series, because I think we're doing two episodes on this, right?
Yeah, we are.
Yeah. So
spoiler alert.
Yeah. we're definitely going to look into this, but that was the last thing that I wanted to chat about in this sort of episode three, but part one of ethics in AI. Before we sign off though, the one cool other show, and I know I keep bringing up shows, is Silicon Valley. And people out there, if you haven't watched it, great
you
show.
You got me, bud. I haven't watched the last season, if I'm being honest, but I've watched everything since, man. Pied Piper? You got to be kidding me.
Exactly. So that show in and of itself is amazing because it's based on like true things. And I say that because, again, random tangent, but for the project that I talked about, the lottery project,
right?
One of the vendors that we talked to collect this data.
Yeah.
In Silicon Valley, there's this episode where
are you the character tell me Jin you're talking Yang, about the brain drain, bud?
No. wish I was, but this dude, the character Jin Yang made a classifier for hot dogs. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh yeah, vaguely.
Yeah, he made a classifier for like hot images that would classify as hot dogs or not hot dogs.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And we were talking to this guy in Silicon Valley yesterday who this show, this sort of episode is based on. And he was telling us that he made this and sold it off. He made this classifier, this company that got sold off then.
Really?
And now he's doing this. Yeah.
That's so it's amazing.
Actually based on true things. Yeah. But coming back to like the ethics part of why I brought the show up was, if you look at cryptocurrency and the new internet that they wanted to make, it's right. Very similar. It's for the people, by the people, right? That's what cryptocurrency is,
yep.
Right? It's not controlled by a central sort of institution. Everybody has a say in it, the people in their community.
Yep.
And that is sort of where we should head towards in terms of AI as well. There needs to be like more governing boards, right? Like the same way as I was in the beginning of the top of the episode, I was saying the Australian, Singapore countries like that have great ethics principles and guidelines out there for their practitioners to follow. There needs to be more of that, but in a community sense, so that everybody sort of knows what's happening, what sort of developments are happening and what's okay and what's not okay.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense, right? Like that's one of the big things. That's the big dilemma with tech, right? Is a lot of politicians, a lot of policymakers, lawmakers, what have you, they're always playing catch up to what's being developed. And tech is just,
yep.
I mean, and
it's, it
and it's
fast.
Understandable because they're just trying to, they have to know what the social impact is going to be for
absolutely.
Them to outlaw it, sorry.
No, you're right. Like they can't, this is we did a smart AI 60 on this, that whether you can stop a rogue AI, and mathematically sort of no, right? And I think that's
right.
One of the, check out our promotional segments of smart AI 60, they're pretty cool. 60 seconds, you learn something new. And that sort of thing, right? I mean, lawmakers can't do much and make laws if they don't understand it. And that's sort of visible if you looked at the Facebook founder, his Congress testimony, right?
Yeah,
if
that's exactly that, what I'm referring to, because it was all yeah. over the map. You had politicians that could somewhat stump him. I'm not going to say they could per se, like he did still mm-hmm. answer the questions, but mm-hmm. there were questions like, how does Facebook even work, right? Like,
and he can't answer that sitting in there. I mean, there's Google in itself, like the search variable is millions of variables that go into your search, right? He can't explain that sitting in a room in like 10 seconds or sort of a minute. Right?
No, not at all.
So this is like, it'd be like the worst thing of Jeopardy ever. But yeah, it's just super important for us to keep sort of looking at the new things that are happening, like to cryptocurrency, like the new internet in that fictitious show, that there are ways of controlling technology to make sure that it enhances people's life. Again, coming back to the beneficence sort of dilemma.
Right.
But it's just important that we keep our sort of heads open and our mind open to letting technology get better and not shut it off, because it's going to happen. So if you control the narrative at how it happens, it's better than sort of taking the backseat and letting things happen anyway.
Right on. Well, let's call it there. We all know that AI has the power to change the world, and it will become more and more mainstream. There's no denying that. Computers themselves are becoming more and more powerful, and developers have easy access to open source learning libraries. The change that AI will bring is going to be rapid and at a massive scale. But it can be argued that anything built for speed and for scale requires a critical examination of its impact for its unintended harms that may also occur at the same scale. Then add the increasing ease of which malicious individuals can deploy state-of-the-art machine learning systems at scale, the urgency hits you. It's good to know that many experts are tackling the issues that AI brings so individuals can protect themselves. Join us next week as we talk about the politics surrounding AI.
And we would love to hear from you. If you have any feedback or questions for our team or topics that you would like us to cover, please let us know. Drop us a line on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn, or visit us at mnpdigital.ca.